I always love to follow Joan for many reasons, but the height is one of them. I always can. Thanks to Joan and Chris for having all of us. Hemingways is like such a special series. Thanks to Hop Farm for having us. It's so nice. I'm going to read from my story collection, Off Days, which is 5 years old this summer, which is wild. And it's also for sale over here, and we also have some limited edition prints, if you would like one of those as well. I'm going to read from the title story. Off Days. This was the year I took cough medicine recreationally because I needed to sleep and it fucked up my dreams. I dreamt I was in California, the Los Angeles of the long goodbye, but Elliot Gould wasn't there. In his place was an old boyfriend, a great love of mine, who coincidentally looked a lot like Elliot Gould. He'd moved into the building across the street with a new girl, a sunny blonde, and I had to listen to them fuck all day. Sometimes they did it on the terrace, their bodies obscured only by vines that hung from the roof like a beaded curtain. They had a garden up there. His new girl had a green thumb. I didn't do much but watch. I didn't seem to have a vocation. It was like all other dreams in that way, where you're free as a cat. That's how you know it's a dream. New Dumpling House. My lunch spot for a time. The sushi was okay. Its subpar quality matched my subpar haircut. I liked it there. I'd get orange caviar stuck in my teeth and pretend I was rich. The waitress would bring the fortune cookies and I'd crush them with my palm. One time, a fortune read, "A good way to keep healthy is to eat more Chinese food." Another party. I was talking too much, again, and everything I said was calling attention to my youth and age simultaneously. "Where's the bong?" I asked. "I need a new dust ruffle," I said. This girl I sort of know called me animated. I say I sort of know her because while I'd pick her up if she was bleeding to death on the side of the road, I wouldn't buy her a coffee. Icebreakers. We were all sitting in a circle on the floor. It could have been the 60s, except for all the screens and mountain goats tattoos. There was this girl I vaguely knew, my friend Andy, my friend Caitlin, a couple of guys I'd slept with, and my old boss from the last restaurant who once called my face severe and said he had a rule about dating girls under 26 that he didn't, but he'd make an exception for me. Andy was asking his icebreakers, though we all knew each other. "Say you're a hitman," he said to me, "and you had to kill someone in this room. How much would you charge?" I shrugged. The old boss laughed and spit his beer on the floor. "What about him?" Andy pointed to the old boss. "$6,000, I said. Everyone laughed except the old boss. "So you'd kill him for a used Honda Civic?" "Yeah, Andy, that's a very reliable car." Emergencies. There were a lot of blackouts, I admit, not just the drunk kind. Even sober, I'd get in my car and drive around aimlessly, not remembering how I ended up where I did. One night, I found myself at the Red Moon, an all-night diner where the waitresses wore scrubs as if at any moment they'd have to tend to an emergency. I only ever ordered pie. A young woman in a Navy uniform came in and ordered a milkshake. I scanned the jukebox. I tried to pick Mother's Little Helper by the Stones, but my finger slipped, and I picked B3 instead of C3, and I had to listen to Lionel Richie's Endless Love on full volume because the knob was stuck at 10. I ate my pie and paid my check. Outside, there was an ambulance parked on the curb. The light was on in the back, and there was this uniformed woman sitting on the gurney and sipping the milkshake from the wax paper cup. As I unlocked my door, the sirens started up, and the ambulance flew off the curb. The woman didn't move as it raced up the hill. She kept sipping and staring out the window. That even an EMT could feel listless made me feel better. Burger fever. I tried to get a job at Salt of the Earth, the most expensive restaurant in town, but only got a call back from a burger joint. the manager hired me on the spot. Burger fever was popular. So popular, in fact, I couldn't leave the house without being recognized. Well-meaning people said, "Don't I know you from somewhere?" when passing by on the street or standing behind me in a grocery line. If a person was a regular, I'd recite their usual order. "You like it bloody as hell." There was a regular who called me good and nice and tipped poorly. She brought a different man with her each time, openly resenting them. She ordered their meals for them, coddled them, said of the Cajun burger, "It's a little spicy, be adventurous." The cook and I had this running joke that she was a serial killer. We imagined her bumping off the schlubs after dinner, hanging their deflating corpses like sundresses in her closet. Winter. The cook knew one thing about me besides my name, and that was that I was eligible for Birthright Israel for another year. He brought Manischewitz to my housewarming. I felt this was an adequate joke. We spent December on MDMA, listening to Kate Bush, draped over my couch like sweaters. I wasn't pretty enough to take to Salt of the Earth, so we ate a lot of Chinese. Another fortune read, "Desire, like the atom, is explosive with creative force." It seemed the work never ended. I didn't care that he smelled like the fryer. I didn't care that he smelled like blood. But it did start to bother me that the shifts were indiscernible from my home life. There I was, two highballs of whiskey in hand, serving them to some guy on my couch. No. The cook wore this wolf fang around his neck, and every time we fucked, it stabbed me in the forehead and left a mark. Once we fucked in his car before our shift, and when I came in, my boss asked me, "Who did I think I was, Gwen Stefani?" I looked in the mirror. The mark looked like a bindi. The next night, I asked the cook to take the fang off. He said, "No." It was childish, sure, but I liked the way he said it. It meant exactly what it sounded like. They always say it's not personal, and it always is. "But who will I kiss at midnight?" I asked him. "I don't know. Kiss your cat," said the cook. I watched Scream most nights to fall asleep. I drifted off to the fervent shrieking of Tatum, played by a blonde Rose McGowan, as she, trapped inside the doggy flap of a garage door, ascended to her electric end. Some things never change, like the odd things that comfort us, or the 2-cent worries that keep us up all night. New Year. Mackenzie called to say this girl we knew from high school was missing, but more than likely she was dead. Her car was found on fire in a field somewhere. The worst part? People back home still thought she'd turn up alive, not broken and blue. Mackenzie said, "You don't light a car on fire unless there's trouble in it." "Shit's getting crazy back home," I said. She said, "Yeah, but this was in Tennessee." I asked if they found the girl's teeth. Mackenzie said, "What for?" Hog logs. I need to interrupt for a second. My husband and I just went to a show all about hot dogs the other day, and this is for Jamie Loftus. Hog logs. I quit Burger Fever because I couldn't stand to watch the cook grip and prod raw meat anymore. I found work at a fancy hot dog restaurant. The hot dogs were $7 without ketchup. The staff called them hog logs. When friends asked what we did for work, we told them we slogged hog logs all day. We didn't get a shift meal, only half off. I flirted with the cooks so they'd make me whatever I wanted, usually hog logs with the works, and I'd go off to the ladies' room, stand in the stall, and devour them. I got pretty fast at it. I probably could have placed in a hot dog eating contest. Placed, not won. Even my dreams were about work. Customers turned over for eternity. We closed at 10, but they kept coming in before I could flip the sign and lock up. By the time I woke up, I'd been at it all night. I never thought to just walk out. Zest. Not long after I got the job, I was fired. Not because I stole hog logs, but because I wasn't zesty enough. I stared somewhere above my boss's head, a dominance technique I'd read about, and imagined myself a juiceless lemon floating in a glass of ice water. Something switched off in me. Maybe it was that my shortcomings had entered into the physical. My back hurt constantly. I didn't smile enough or in the right way. I felt crooked and old, like I had aged 20 years. AARP cards started coming in the mail. When Caitlin asked how I was doing, I misheard her, said reading. Domestic troubles. I needed to rake the leaves, but I couldn't move from the lawn chair, the one I'd spray-painted a cheerful blue. I was rereading The Bell Jar and thinking about Janet Frame and Francesca Woodman and Charlotte Perkins Gilman, about how I tried to read Jane Eyre when I was 10 but couldn't get through it. I thought about the time my mother came to visit and called the lawn chair my hospital chair, and we laughed. When the Jehovah Witnesses came knocking, I took cover under my desk like I did during grade school earthquake drills, still bracing myself for contact. Rock bottom. I enrolled in the artist's way via the public library. The author was always telling me to reward my artist child, to take my artist for a walk. Sometimes my inner artist was a dog, sometimes a prodigy. The author said, "The great creator gives us creativity, and what we produce is our gift back to him." The author was a recovering alcoholic. What I wore to rake leaves. Ankle-length black and white pattern dress, black and white knee socks, beige Oxfords, pea-green cardigan, babushka on head, Elvis gold cat's eye sunglasses. It was very Grey Gardens. The neighbors thought I was a lunatic. The Jehovah Witnesses didn't even bother. A voice on the radio said, "When you want space the most, you need it the least." Donegal Gas Station. There was a man with dentures hanging out of his mouth, like wax teeth on Halloween. He pushed them out with his tongue and sucked them back in again. And just like that, I was homesick. I wasn't regressing per se, but I was thinking an awful lot about adolescence. I was a sensitive kid, prone to bad fevers, the kind that drive you crazy. No matter where I planted myself, in my parents' bed or on the couch, I saw skeletons scale the walls and ceilings. Sometimes they looked like the ones from the Disney Halloween special, other times like the Crypt Keeper, except they never cackled in that funny way. Just quiet neon death crawling up the covers. The doctor called them hallucinations. My father agreed with him. My mother believed me. None of it helped. Like everything, it just had to pass. I learned about sex from two movies, Fear and Species. I fantasized about having orgasms on roller coasters with dangerous older men and killing them afterwards. One day I looked around. It seemed everyone was falling apart, not just me. The hairdresser could barely stand. She was 8 months pregnant. She wheezed and sniffled, said it was the bleach. The barista was sick again. She sneezed in the espresso, and grounds covered the counter like fresh earth. The doctor was obese and had a limp. She said it wasn't a hematoma on my leg, just a fracture that didn't heal right. She said, "If you really want me to, I can run an x-ray, but honestly, there'll probably just be a lump on your leg forever." Another fortune read, "Suppose you can get what you want." I turned this over like an engine all day. A productive day. I cut the tags out of all of my underwear and modeled them for myself in the mirror. I liked what I saw. I pulled my underwear up high and rolled an oversized Jägermeister t-shirt to expose my midriff. I called it Trashy Claudia Schiffer. Thanks to fortune cookies, I learned the Chinese words for pork, wine, roast duck, chicken, sweet chicken, fish, rice, tea, and milk. Now all I need to know was the phrase for may I have, and I'd be fluent. Fluent in a very narrow context, but bilingual all the same. New job, new you. I landed a job at the hair salon. I would be in charge of the washing and sweeping up of the hair. The owner said I needed a tuberculosis test. I thought TB was like polio or scarlet fever, a bygone disease from harder times. Heather. The Allegheny County Health Department was terrifying. It looked like an elementary school from a 70s horror flick. The walls were half wood paneled, half yellowy white. The staff were buck-toothed and laughed at odd intervals. The nurse had big white blonde hair and thick blue eyeshadow. She was Tammy Faye reincarnate. She was friendly like Tammy too, asking what I did for work, where I lived, if I had a boyfriend. Then she called me Heather. She said, "Just a pinch now, Heather. Have a nice day. We'll see you Thursday, Heather." I didn't correct her. I liked being Heather. I forgot to show up for my TB results, which meant I'd have to test again. It was $25 I didn't have to begin with and didn't have then. At least I'd get to be Heather again. Matinees. I still had a week before I would start at the salon, and I'd gotten my tax return. I saw matinees every day. Laura and I saw the never-ending story on a Monday morning. As the credits rolled, that infamous theme echoing around us, I got a call from Cory, Pennsylvania. I didn't know anyone from Cory, the teen pregnancy capital of America. I picked up, and it was a girl breathing heavy and moaning, saying, "Oh yes, fuck me." I wondered if cell phones were like CB radios. I put the phone up to Laura's ear. She said she didn't hear a thing. Thank you.